And then you may want to analyze, well, what is the importance of the begadim? What is the importance of the menorah? Why do we have to have a menorah? So I mean, just if you're asking it as a general question, like why all the detail, because the answer is because the Mishkan is very important, obviously. Hello?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the answer. You might want to say, you might want to phrase the question differently, and then it would emerge as a question. And you could say, well, yeah, but the Torah doesn't go into the details of everything that's important. If you wanted to counter me and say, for example, by Shabbos, when you have 39 malachos, and it's expensive, but yet the Torah just uses one word, malacha.
Right.
And it doesn't list the 39, and it doesn't go into the particularities. So why is it that in this case, the Torah chooses the Torah Shebichtav to go into the particularities? Why don't we have the same thing that the Jews were commanded to build a Mishkan according to everything that I commanded you? And where is it to be found? Then we would find the particulars would be listed in the Torah Shebichtav. So that, I think, would be a legitimate way to phrase the question. That it seems... But the Torah sort of seems to be, I'm not saying it is, but at least seems to be some kind of a deviation from the normal pattern of the Torah, which is to, to just, the Torah Shebichtav basically alludes to something, so that we know that that was the divine will, that the thing itself is that which is significant should be either mentioned directly or alluded to in the Torah Shebichtav, and then the details are usually in the Torah Shebichtav. But here, the details seem to be spelled out in the Torah Shebichtav. So that's the way I'd phrase the question. Okay, I don't really have an answer right now. It's a big question. It goes down to the importance of the Mishkan. What is the importance of the Mishkan? And then there's the Ramban, there's Rashi. It's like big. So that's a good question, but I just it's not something we can sort of work out together today. I have to really do some research, go through the Ramban, go through Rashi, and others. Like, what is the real significance of having a Mishkan? The Rambam has his position in terms of Karbanos, because the Mishkan is tied in with Karbanos. So then the question is, what's the whole purpose of the system of Karbanos and the... there's a big machlokas between the Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim and the Ramban and others. So you want to start researching that, fine, but at the shir, I can't really just give a direct answer right now.
Rabbi, I have more of a specific question.
Thing that I will say one thing. I don't have the exact sukkim, but you'll see it a number of times. With regard to the mission, it says that Moshe and Aaron did everything that God commanded them. And I don't have the specific right now, but Rashi very often comments on that, Malame Shaloshina, or Shaloshinu, that to teach us that they didn't, why did the Pasuk have to say that they did what God commanded? That should be obvious by now. And that the Chazal point out, Rashi quotes, that, it's to make the point that they didn't make any changes. So Rabbi Chait one time raised that question. It seems strange. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, he was the faithful B'chol Desi Nemanu. He's the faithful servant of God, and that God entrusted him to give over the whole Torah. So why would Moshe want to make a change? So he made the point that In connection with the Mishkan specifically, that in all places, of course, everybody has to. That emotion. I'm just giving my own take on things. I quote or I chape, and I'm not attributing the way I explain it to him. So I'm just. Just saying that the basic idea of Loshino, that to teach us that he didn't change is a very important idea. Now I'm giving you my take on it. And you see that there's a very powerful emotion within people. A very powerful emotion. And it's really an idolatrous kind of an emotion. The idolatrous emotion is very powerful. The Torah, the Shema says, you know, Vasartem, when you turn away, Vavaratem, Elohim Acherim, you'll worship other gods. So we say that twice a day. Of course, the question arises, just because the person turns away. Now, turning away means turning away from Torah, stops learning Torah. So immediately, they'll worship idols. So why will they worship idols? Isn't there an in-between? So I've discussed many times that most the inclination to quote-unquote be religious or to worship God in quotes over here. Everybody believes in God, but that doesn't mean that they're not idolaters. Because for us, the fact that a person is religious and just believes in some higher force, that's not serving God. That's not worshiping God. God is the reality, the true God. That one's concept has to be fixed, has to be directed towards the true God to the extent that we can recognize him. But any falsification in what a person believes to be God is really idolatry. Because that's what idolatry is, that he's not relating to the God of reality. So he set up something else in his mind, which he regards as being the ultimate power, and if it's not the real God, so it's idolatry. But that's why the Sartre, that a person has very strong emotions in the area of God. And that's why everybody has their own concept of God. And their own concept of God, it stems from their own psychological makeup. It's a projection of certain needs and desires and certain images from the past that they retain in their own mind. And that becomes for them their concept of God. And their projection means they objectify it. They make it seem as though this is something outside, something real. But it's not real. It's just a figment of their imagination, projection. So that's Fasaratem. When a person turns away from Torah, he's forced to subordinate all of his emotions to what his mind tells him to be the truth. So that's Avodah Hashem. And there's a very powerful emotional desire to change, because most of the time, when a person is first, when a person learns and he's really subjecting himself to the truth, so it's not necessarily emotionally pleasing. And you see that today in Judaism. I mean, there's a lot of changes. If people make good changes. You see, projections, you know, this, whatever, this is a skula, that becomes a big thing. Different types of things which have nothing to do with Torah. Nevertheless, religious people adopt them. If you do this, you know, people have all kinds of practices. Even like we were talking yesterday, like by Abdullah, some people pour the wine over the fire and then they take some of the wine and put it in their pockets. You see, I'm sure some of you guys may have seen that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some of the older guys. Maybe Howie. Have you seen that?
Yeah, the eyebrows.
So how do you, how do you explain a thing like that? What does this have to do with Judaism? You mean to say it's just wine, you put it in your pocket, and it's cool, it's good for parnassah, man, that's going to turn into dollar bills, you know?
Have the chali.
The key in the chali?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a newer one, isn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't talking about that. I was just talking about, like, if you're at an affair or something, and they give out the challah, and they said, you just have some challah, it's a segula.
Yeah, well, you see that's a very strong emotion. That's a projection.
The new thing is the key. Well, they also do the thing with the candle. However high you hold the candle is how high your shidduch is going to be.
Yeah, so you see, that's a mode, that's a magical mode of thinking. It's not this particular thing or that particular thing. What you need to look at is that underlying mode of thinking, which everybody, that's not Judaism at all. You'll find that people in every religious system have these crazy kind of mishagasim. And then you're destroying Judaism. You're reducing Judaism to just something, an ordinary man-made, primitive system. And why do people do this? Because it fits into a certain emotional scheme. And that's why, getting back to the point, but in the area of the Mishkan, there is a danger in the Mishkan. I mean, I'm sort of like, I don't want to go too far in the Mishkan because it's a nice, it's an important subject, but as I said, I'm not ready yet. I got to review the Rambam, you know, and all the different commentators. But just for starters, you see that in the Mishkan, there's the establishment of a physical sanctuary, and you can see yourself today with the Kotel. Now that already can be catering to certain powerful emotions that people have. And it's a delicate thing, because the Torah wants to remove us from connection to objects, to the deification of objects, to the projection of any kind of a power onto objects. That's the root of idolatry. And you could see how this danger exists. Once you have a Mishkan with a certain awe attached to it, you have physical objects, you have things like the Kruvim. So, I mean, it's very dangerous for certain people that don't have knowledge. That's why it was really under the control of the Kohanim. It wasn't that each person couldn't have his own Mizbeach in his backyard to just bring sacrifice. So, Malam Esh Loshina, the general idea being that in this area, only that which God dictated is permitted. And any type of a change, because based upon a person's own emotions, would be... Arthur, it'll be entering into the realm of idolatry. So, to make that point, that even Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah is making the point, the extent to which Moshe Rabbeinu was careful in this area, because this specific area is of extreme importance.
What pasuk is that?
Malam Eid Shalosh? As I said, I it could be in this, you know, in a few places in the construction of the Migdash, it mentions. I don't know where the pasuk is now. As I said, it's in this area, general area. Maybe in next week's session, I'm not sure. But in the construction of the Mishkan, it does say that they did Kachol Asher Asa Hashem. And that pasuk is found in a few places. And Rashi comments, Malam Eish Loshina. Even Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, the most perfected individual. But that was a maila, that he, you know, anyone is subject to this emotional inclination to make a change. But once you make, if you give into that emotion, so then it's not the Mishkan anymore. You can't serve God through the vehicle of your emotional feeling. That's the essence of idolatry. Unfortunately, that's very, very prevalent today. You have that amongst, you have it on all sides of the spectrum. Even amongst the frumest of the frum, you have it amongst the modern, you know, like the modern, they have their thing, their liberal agenda, and, you know, they want to be in tune with modern times, so they may have a problem with certain things in the Torah, so they start to spin. They start to spin it and to make changes until it sounds fashionable to them. They're not comfortable with certain things. So, or the role of women, for example, you can take that. That's a big challenge to the moderns, because it's barred, because that's the fashion of the times, that women should be equal and women should have rights. So if they're Orthodox, or if they're not Orthodox, they'll forget it. So that they don't have any system to begin with. Like the system is whatever emotion of the moment. But if you're Orthodox, you know, you're sort of limited, because the women can't daven for the Amid. You know, there is a Mechitza. So then they're subtle about it. They try to make certain changes and get around it without specifically violating the halacha, but within the spirit of equality, and they, you know, you can tell that they're not comfortable, and they want to make changes, which is the false way. I mean, the truth is, a person has to recognize that the Torah is an eternal truth, and the fads of today are just fads, and tomorrow there's another fad, and a person, first of all, a person has to be, that's a muna. A person has to have a muna that the way of the Torah is the correct way, even if he can't, even if he can't explain and defend it why there needs to be a mechitza. He doesn't have an appropriate way of explaining it. So then it doesn't matter. But what he should do is to try and study the Torah system. That's a whole science. How do I discover what the ideas and the values are behind the system of the Torah? And once you can elucidate that and show that this is based upon an eternal concept, then he can defend it in an intelligent way. Because the idea of the Torah will always be superior, has to be, to whatever the concept is which people are bringing to try and tear down the Torah, to try and challenge the Torah. So that's a big thing of Shinui. That's all I'll say at this point in time. I don't have much more. All right, I'll take I don't know how much. I mean, if you have questions about the Mishkan, I don't know how much. I really didn't make a study of the Mishkan that much. I'll take some questions. We don't have to necessarily do the parsha of the week. I never intended that this has to be that way. It's just in general, in a general sense, when we're doing, Yosef and the brothers, the Brachos, and then we're in Shemos, stuff like that. But we can still do things from the last Seder. Or if you have a question about the Mishkan that I feel I can deal with over the phone right now, fine. Go ahead.
Rabbi, I have a specific question.
Go ahead.
The menorah, the way it was made. First, Rashi says Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't picture it, so Hashem had to show him an image. And then even after he showed him the image, he wasn't able to make it, so he just threw it into the fire, and out came the menorah. I was wondering what the whole idea is.
That's a midrash. That's what the Plame Shai. Now, the Plame Shai is Mikshar Tata, right? That the menorah could be made from parts and assembled. It had to be made from one, from one piece, right?
Right.
So, I mean, plain shot is that it has to be made with the greatest skill. I mean, my interpretation is that it's a greater degree of expertise in chachma when you take one chunk of gold or silver and you fashion it, you sculpt it from that, as opposed to when it's easier, to build things from parts. That's much easier, and you put the parts together. That's just an interpretation. But as far as that medrash is concerned, that what? That he took it and threw it into the fire?
Well, my question is, what does it mean that he didn't understand how to make it? Like, even after he showed him what it was supposed to look like. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was a great chacham, so I don't understand what it means that he couldn't figure out how to make it.
I don't know. You're just picking out a medrash. I don't know.
Okay.
You got to think about these things.
Right,
man? There's a lot of medrash. You got it.
I was asking about something a couple weeks ago in Yisrael.
Yeah.
The Kavaleim Hargigigas.
Yeah.
So I asked you. I know we spoke about it a little bit, like 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. That's if you want to discuss that. I mentioned to you that was a good question.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I mean, that's
all right. That I could do. That's relevant.
Particularly the Modar Rabba. Remember that part?
Yeah.
I'll go get a Gemara, but there's a Modar Rabba where he says that.
All right. If the guys want to do that, I don't mind doing that. So get the.
Can we get a Gemara Shabbos?
So he says, "Va'od she'amar lana kodesh baruch hu Yisrael, macharti lachem torati, uviyachol nimcharti imash, nemar v'yichu li truma, ki atruma ti ali, v'ani nima kadera, dodi li."
The Rashi, well, give me the,
Perek
what?
Chaf hei, gimel.
Hold it. Okay.
So in the beginning he just goes through like some lashon about the zos, and he says I'm even zvonin.
Slow down a little bit because the connection's not that great. Which Rashi?
The Ramban.
The
zos hatruma.
Yeah.
So in the beginning he goes through like the lashon the zos, and then he says v'am even yizvonin, and after that.
Hold on a second.
V'am even yizvonin. Yeah, and then it says v'elashmos.
Kvar Rav says Abravishes Rabba Medrash Miskanim as Boning. Maybe he's Boning. Good. Rabbi Elish Mos Rabba. Good.
Zotzar Shuma Shetikachom Itam Knesset Israel. Right. Shehi Truma Shnemar Kadosh Israel Hashem Rishis Tuazam. Hashem Od Amar Lahen Hakadosh Baruch Hu. This part. Israel. Macharti Lachem Torasi Kuyachol Nimcharti Ma Shnemar V'Yichol Truma Ki Atruma Tiali. Vani imak derech dodi li. Like, what's going on there? It's a sale or something? Like, why?
Is that what? Slow down. I can't hear you,
Sorry, I'm mumbling. I just don't understand. Is this some sort of sale? Why is the truma so important that it's worth the value of the Torah? Like, what's going on?
The value of the Torah?
Like, it seems like it's a sale. It's just some trade. That we're giving truma and he's giving us the Torah? Or is, no?
I don't have an immediate answer to this. But the truma is really Knesset Yisrael. All right, I know. Leave it alone. I have to think about it. Okay, next.
You want to do a couple of Hargigigas?
I don't mind because, that's something we can do.
I would want to do it.
Okay, how do the other guys feel?
No one's saying they don't. question?
Nobody's what?
What's the question?
What's the question?
The question is that it's 2 weeks ago in Parshas Yisrael, that where basically there's it's a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Peches, right? Where it says the pasuk is Vayishyatsu b'tachta sahar, right? That they stood under the mountain. So, but tachtis means like literally underneath the mountain instead of on the side of it. So Amar of Bibi Rachama Bar Chasa Mulamit to Kavak Arz Baruch Hu Olei Masar Kiki Yis. Amar Lahem Imatem Mekabu Matora Muda Vim Lav Shem Teg Turaskan. Right. So that this pasuk is telling you that God, He picked up a mountain and held it over them, and He said to them, like, if you want to like accept the Torah, fine, and if not, so you'll be buried right here. So he said, basically, if you want it, I'm going to kill you now unless you are Mekabel Torah, right? And Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Mikan Modara, whatever. Anyway, the point is like this: that if a guy, let's say, a guy would say he makes a shvuah, he doesn't want to keep Shabbos, right? So we say that the shvuah is no good because of the concept of Mushbav Yoyim Har Sinai, meaning that that every Jew already he was part of a shvuah that was taken in Har Sinai to keep the Torah. But that means to say that Klal Yisrael made a conscious decision in Har Sinai to keep the Torah. But if, according to this Medrash, I mean, they were basically forced into it. That seems to go against the whole view of Sinai that we have of Nasa v'Nishma, of them accepting the Torah. I mean, that's the question, basically.
Well, did you do the Gemara with them?
We didn't go through the whole Gemara. I just told I just told them whatever. You know.
I don't have. If you want, I can go get the. First, we'll see if the guys want to go through that. It's you know, the Gemara is not that complicated.
I think I have the Gemara. I can read it right now if you want.
Okay, no, I want to get my own copy. I have to go upstairs for that.
Do you guys want to do it? I mean,
it's interesting that it's a nice one. I don't know if we'll do the whole thing today, but it says that there were two Kabbalos that were in the days of.
Right, that's another question.
So that's an interesting, you know, it's in Yonah D'Yom a little bit, too.
Yeah.
So, you get a little consensus. I'm going to go upstairs and get the Gemara.
Okay.
I don't want to force it on the guys, unless I actually have to.
Well, I think you can force it.
I know, but I first of all, prefer to make them feel that it's voluntary.
That's great.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm being serious.
Okay. Now, when I say that, you know, sometimes I have nothing to say, and I got to think about it.
Right.
Sometimes I may have a thought, and as I say, at first thought is superficial, but I think there's something to it. Now, as you go into it more deeply, you know.
Right. Can you state the question again?
Yeah, let him restate the question.
It sounds like segula for Torah, you know? The fact that you're involved in this mitzvah, you get another mitzvah?
Now, I think that the Oron is specific. I have to make a more detailed study of the. You see, the Torah is going into specific. I don't know if I finished the thought. That's why, getting back to the original question, there's such a description. And when I went into that thing about Malamed Shloshina, I was tying it into the general, in a general sense, the reason why the Torah has to go into specifics, because this is an area of great concern, where the emotion of Shinui would come into the picture. Mm-hmm. Because once you're dealing with creating these physical, you see, that's the problem. People, the challenge of Judaism is that it's abstract. It doesn't involve the emotions in the same way that the other religions involve the emotions. There's all these, you see, every religion has physical things and little statues and statuesques and things in bracelets and all kinds of physical things. So the whole essence is to cater to all of the emotions. And Judaism really does not. The essence of Judaism is Chachma. And to be involved in the abstract, to be involved in knowledge. And you have to redirect your emotions. The emotional satisfaction should come from being involved in the truth, from the MS. But that's contrary to the way the emotions go. And this can only come about after a major transformation of the Gavra. So Judaism is very leery. We never promoted art and in architecture and sculpture and so forth, because we recognize the tremendous dangers that evokes all of the latent emotions of idolatry. So now we have a Mishkan, because we need to have a Mishkan. But that, the point that I was trying to make, I don't know if I tied it in at the end, because the question was, why all the description? I think that was what Howie's question was. And I tried to clarify the question, that asking for why there's description is not a problem, because God's telling you how to do it, but given that in general the Torah Shavichtav does not contain these elaborate descriptions, why here?
Well,
so it would seem that in these two, I think it's a good answer. I mean, it's an answer which, in a general, there's nothing wrong with the general idea.
Right.
That in these two areas, you'll see a tremendous amount of specifics. The areas of... Interesting. We can make a study. Where do you see more of the... I mean, it ties in... Did I give the share last week? Yeah, I gave the share last week about the union of the Bein Adam LaMakom, you know, the Avodas Hashem, as opposed to Bein Adam Mishpat, the area of Mishpat.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I don't know if I... Because that was my Dvar Torah last Shabbos, and I... You know, I ended it with a quote from the... It's from the Haftorah. It's in, I think it's in Yirmiyahu, if I'm not mistaken. It's the one that we read at the end of Parshat Tzav, and also we read this one on Tisha B'Av, where it says, Al Yitzhalel Chacham B'Chachmaso, that the Chacham should not exalt, you know, not glorify himself in his Chachma. The Al Yitzhalel Ashir B'Ashro, and the wealthy person should not glorify himself in his wealth. Kiyim bezos yishalel amishalel. In other words, the pasuk is basically saying, interesting, that it's not saying that a person should never exalt in something. In other words, to feel a certain sense of accomplishment or a certain sense of glory. It's merely saying that because there are two areas, apparently, where a person has this, which evoke this human feeling of that I really accomplished something. I'm not going to say egotism or whatever. I mean, it has to do with ego, pride. But it's saying that, well, clearly, I mean, either a person's a chacham, so that's something which everybody respects. He's brilliant. He's a genius. So obviously, a person, if he has become a chacham, so he's going to feel a certain sense of pride. So there's another saying, Al yisal chacham de chachmaso. Then the other area, which people automatically, for whatever reason, have this tremendous feeling of exaltation as well. And he's saying, Al Yitzhalel. I mean, I have another thought. I mean, of the two, at least Chachma is something real. I was just thinking about this recently, that the most absurd pursuit in the world is the pursuit of money. It's absolutely absurd. That this is like a little off the top, you know, side point. I was thinking about this idea yesterday as I was driving in. That it's something which everybody takes for granted and everybody assumes is extremely important and respects. Millionaire, and now he's a billionaire, and it's the most absurd thing in the world. It's pursuing things which have absolutely no value whatsoever, which have no purpose, and which money assumes. You see, money itself assumes a certain... From a psychological, emotional standpoint, assumes a certain significance which it doesn't have in reality. It's just fantasy. Because in reality, it's a means to an end, and this is a necessity, and a person has a certain, like, he needs a coat. I mean, it's a means to an end. That's all it is. And to the extent that a person has a need for it, so the pursuit is like any other pursuit, obviously. He needs to make a fire, so he's going to go chop down wood. But once a person has enough wood for the fire, and he's going to keep chopping more wood, more trees, to build up storages of... tons and houses and cities filled with wood for fires that he'll never make. I mean, the guy's insane. He belongs to an insane asylum. So the pursuit of money is basically that's what it is. And people who pursue money have no clue as to how it ought to be spent. Now, if these people, after they made it, would use it for some intelligent purpose which would really achieve something, I mean, you feel like, why? He's not really interested in money. He's interested in the end. And as a result of the money, he's fulfilling the end, then it would make sense. But these people have no end to that at all. There's no goal. They have no goal to live for. They don't even know what to live for. So that's why it's the most absurd thing. But nevertheless, you see, the Navi points out two things of Al Yitzhalel. Chachma is Chachma. That's important. That has a real value. Of course, I mean, the Chachma per se is not perfection. Because our idea of Chachma is not the external acquisition. Got to be the internal, that is to say that it molds the personality, that the person lives his life on the basis of truth. But Chachma itself is an extremely important acquisition. But wealth itself is purely a fantasy. But nevertheless, since people exult in it, so he's saying Al Yisrael. Kiyim b'zos Yisrael ha-Mishalel. It is one thing that the Mishalel, made interesting, he says Mishalel, every word is exact. But he doesn't say that you should be Mishalel for it, he says Yisrael ha-Mishalel, if you want to, so to say, if a guy wants to be a Mishalel. It doesn't have to be, if you, really you don't have to be a Mishalel. That is, you don't have to engage in this activity, but look, it's a human thing to feel a certain sense of pride and accomplishment. Yeah, but at least if you feel that, it should be with regard to something that does make sense, that is an accomplishment. So what is it? Haskel v'yadoa'osi. That a person is haskel, that he uses his seichel and knows me. That's the formula of what yadis is. And this fits in with what we're talking about. It's not just, it doesn't say v'yadoa'osi, which is a strong term. But in and of itself, everybody feels that they are close to God or they know God. Every religion feels that way. Yeah, but the only problem is, it's not haskel. It's only through the mind. I mean, it's amazing, like all the ideas that we teach in the yeshiva, that a person has to relate to God through the mind, and you know, it's contrary to the Jewish world today, which believes in, no, just plain faith, blind faith, amuni, you can't question. I mean, it's absurd. Haskel v'yadoa'osi. That the only way that you can get to know God is through haskel. To the extent that your level, of course, it's a subjective thing. I mean, subjective in the sense that some people can reach a higher degree of yiddish, and some people can't. But that's the perfection. God gave you a certain tool, and that tool is the only one through which you can gain a yiddish, and that's the one that you have to activate. And it goes further, though. It says, "Ken Yer Hashem, because I am, because I Hashem osa chesed." I'm not sure the exact word now.
Mishpat, I have it. Mishpat Tzedaka Ba'aretz. Kiva Eile Chafatz.
Mishpat Chesed, Mishpat Tzedaka?
Yeah, Chesed or Mishpat Tzedaka Ba'aretz.
Yeah, guys.
Kiva Eile Chafatz in Um Hashem.
That's right. And the emphasis should be on the word Kiva Eile. Yeah. It doesn't mention the other thing. It does not mention the other thing. Which means God doesn't want you to keep Shabbos. God doesn't want you to keep kosher. Yeah, but I'm saying that what the point was, that all of the different observances and restrictions and commandments and so forth, they all have a certain goal. Contrary to what people believe, it's not just an isolated thing. You know, you do this mitzvah and it has a mystical significance. No, everything is geared towards the achievement of a certain type of goal, and that is to be in line with the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is expressed through chesed, mishpat, and tzedakah. That's what we were saying last week, that the whole essence of the Eilah mishpatim, that this is the real arena of perfection with regard to one's relationship to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because it means to say that a person is basing his life completely with regard to emes, and which is expressed in mishpat, and with regard to a certain ahavas Hashem, which expresses itself in a certain type of a chesed and tzedakah. So I thought it's fine. I don't think I mentioned it last week when I was, you know, talking to you guys in the morning. But when I prepared for the Dvar Torah, so I thought of attaching it to the words of the Navi. So now I'm thinking now in this context that it's interesting to note that, I mean, the general subject we're dealing with now that you brought it up, that Howie brought it up, that it's always a good idea. By the way, I'm always trying to give you little tips on methodology. That when you raise a question like this, about detail in an area, it's always good to sort of make it into a general question, like in which areas does the Torah go into detail? So, because if there are other areas, then you have to study those areas and see what they have in common. So, for example, you have it by the Mishkan, and then you have it by Karbanos. Going into Vayikra, it's extensive, all the details of every Karban. And of course, that seems to be connected to the Mishkan. The two are connected. But now we have a basis, because we see that this area is a controversial area, or it contains a certain type of a difficulty, certainly the area of Karbanos. When I'm not going into it right now, some of you already may be familiar with the Shita of the Rambam, where he says, the Rambam Shita, you should go through it in the Amar Nebuchim, the Ramban quotes it in Vayikra, because he argues with it. But he really says that ideally, the Torah would really prefer, so to speak, not to even have Karbanos. But the idea of bringing a carbon to God was so ingrained in the human psyche at the time the Torah was given that it sort of would have been impossible to have as a religion, to set up a religion without carbonos. So what the Torah did was to utilize that and to because then people had a false idea of carbonos, but set up the system in such a way that it would be like a cure, so to speak. Sometimes you have to, so it incorporated within a system of carbonos true ideas that would wean a person away from the false ideas. But you see from that the delicacy of the subject, the danger that's involved in a system of carbonos. And because people, again, attribute powers to, mystical powers to things. Now, the whole notion of bringing a sacrifice to God, of a sort of propitiating God, and so on and so forth. So it's a delicate area. That is, if it's done correctly, so then it's very good. But if it's not done correctly, so then it can deteriorate and become a negative. And that's basically what happened with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That I think it says in Tehillim that Shafa Chamazo, so to speak. Again, I'm just quoting in general, paraphrasing. That God vented his anger, so to speak, on Eitzim V'Avanim. That he wanted the Jews were worthy of destruction, but instead God destroyed the Mikdash. Which means to say that when people are corrupted, so then the Mikdash became an obstacle. They do whatever they wanted to do, and then they bring a carbon. They feel secure, religious security, that they got an atonement, as opposed to perfecting themselves. So you have the detail in that area. Two areas. Now we can understand the Mishkan, because the Mishkan is dangerous. That you see, it says even by Moshe that lo shina, because you're dealing with physical, the construction of physical objects. And there, there's always a certain appeal to a certain emotion, and there's a danger that a person would like to add a little touch, which stems a very subtle thing, which stems from his own emotional desires. And no, to the contrary, a person has to refrain from that completely and to subordinate himself to the true ideas that God reveals to us. Then you have it by the carbonos, because that also is a very, very dangerous area. And where else do we have that? Is there any other area where the Torah goes into the specifics and the details? It seems to me that, I don't know to the same extent, but again, in the area of mishpat, the Eila HaMishpatim, Ashatasim, all the particular cases, if a person should do this, a person takes an object, doesn't return it, and swears falsely, and then, the Adam HaChavero area, seems to me, at least that you'll have to check me out, even if I'm wrong, seems to have much, much more detail to it than the so-called Avodah Hashem, or the term we're using, quote-unquote, the ritual area. Shechita, it does also have by the, it does mention the animals, it's true, it mentions the kosher animals and the unkosher animals. It mentions the forbidden sexual relations. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess you can make a study of that. As I said, this is tentative. Could be off on that one. I'm not sure. But because like in Mishpatim, all the particular cases of returning, the object, you see the object of your, the lost object of your enemy, Shor or Yivcha, etc. It just seems to me that there's more of a particular. In kashrus, it gives you the general outline, separating one type of animal from the other. All right, that's my point. If that is the case, I mean, if I'm correct on this one, and I stand to be correct if I'm wrong, I'm just thinking of this right now, but you would see that same idea, that the emphasis in the Torah. You see that, or repetition, for example, the exhortations against Avodah Zarah, for example, probably the biggest theme in Torah Shabbat, repeated, warning. The greater the degree, either of resistance, or the danger that of distortion, because of certain emotions within a person, the greater the need for the specification in the Torah Shabbat. And other things, the whole system of the all the laws pertaining to Bas B'Chalav and so on and so forth, all the laws pertaining to Shabbos, that's, brought down the Torah Shabbat Peh. Okay. Oh, let me finish. On that point about the Aron, again, this is a superficial answer, is that of all the Kalim, the Aron is would seem to be the most significant. Basically, you know, that the Mishkan has to house the Aron. The Aron has the Luchos. That's the essence. That's the essence of everything. The Luchos, the Dvar Hashem. So, therefore, I think what the Midrash is saying is that that a person first has to form a certain attachment to the extent that he forms an attachment to the Aron, so he'll be zochet to Torah because he'll recognize what am I putting in this effort for? What is so significant? What's the importance of it? So that emotion that creates within him a certain sense of awe for Torah is good because then that will lead him to want to study the Torah. I think that's the idea that he'll be zochet. But there's no magical thing over here, obviously. It's a rational thing. That if a person is osig in the Aron, so why am I putting all this energy into the Aron? Why, it's only natural that he's going to want to know what's so important about it. And that will lead him to be osig in Torah itself. That's a rational thing. Okay, next. And this whole idea that the Jews from Maccabi are this kafaleim harkagigas, that's a challenging one. So what does it mean that Guy overturned the mountain on them and threatened that, they'll be killed, which implies that they were coerced? And then, the Tosafot says, well, if that's the case, then it provides some kind of a mitigating or an excuse for the Jews. And then the idea that afterwards it says, but in the time of Purim, so they were Makabel Me'ava. I think Rashi says because of Avas Anes, the love of the Nes, which is very, very difficult because the Nes of Purim doesn't seem to compare at all. That was a Nes, that was a Nes in the Sturm. It wasn't an open Nes, so to speak. So, if you guys want to do that, we'll do that next week. All right?
All right.
All right.
Right, man.